Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, June 19th, 2012, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts Lavendar, Sierra, and Anastasia. If you've missed our last few shows, we've been delighted to welcome Anastasia to our radio team, since she's been with us since before Starseed Hotline was even born. And tonight, we are welcoming Chris to Starseed Radio Academy as our new switchboard host. Sahar had one of her classes get moved to Tuesday evening, and we know she'll do well until she can be with us again when the class is completed. And it's hard to believe that it's nearly summer solstice already. Only 24 hours from now, on Wednesday, June 20th, at 7:09 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And starting July 1st through July 7th, the Teton meetings again take place. If you haven't learned about this semi-annual gathering of galactic councils, look back through our archives for shows with Teton in the title, and there have been several. Tonight, our special guest is Lisa Beretta, a practicing astrologer, intuitive counselor, certified Reiki practitioner, and author of The Book of Transformation. In fascinating, extraordinarily detailed chapters, she teaches that as the Earth passes upwards from below the central plane of the Milky Way galaxy to above it during 2012, everything changes. The shift in frequency is lifting the veil for us to experience a higher consciousness. We are evolving into a lighter, more psychic, and authentic existence. The Book of Transformation guides you through the phases of awakening and shows you what you can expect with the new portal into spiritual development that is opening. Lisa is the popular weekly astrologer on stillababe.com and contributing writer for vividlife.me/ultimate. And she appeared on George Noory's Coast to Coast Radio just a few days ago. Her new book is available on Amazon and at warwickassociates.net. We want to thank Chris for hosting the switchboard this evening, and for those with questions or comments tonight, the call-in number is 917-889-8292. Remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. If you like our show, we encourage you to click follow on our show page. You'll get our show notices, and it will help promote our show and guests. And then, remember to tell a few friends about us. For our new listeners, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation. And we also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. We'd also like to thank Rose and Sahar for their continuing great work and dedication on behalf of our Starseed forum. You can also find us on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. And we'll get started in just a moment, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. Our Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. We now offer a Stage 4 support service with Sierra for readings, especially with contactees and abductees, so check out Sierra's World on our main site. And now I'd like to introduce my co-host, Lavendar, Sierra, and Anastasia. Good evening, ladies.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Good evening. Lavendar here.
Well, we would like to welcome everyone to the show, and we do have Lisa on the line with us. Lavendar, do you want to give a little intro here?
Yes, go ahead and bring her on.
Okay. Just a second, and we're waiting for this button to get clicked. Okay. Lisa Beretta, welcome to Starseed Radio Academy.
Hi, ladies. Thanks for having me on tonight. I was looking forward to tonight's show.
Well, thank you for being part of our guest. I just wanted to start out by saying that I just printed out the summary of your book, and it's a couple of paragraphs. And Lisa, I'd just like to read it right now. Okay. The Book of Transformation is a complete guide to what you can expect to experience as planet Earth moves into the Milky Way galaxy and edges closer to the higher frequency from the galactic center. This dial has been moving backward due to the precision of the equinox through the sign of Pisces for the past 2,000 years. The era of illusion and religious dogma is about to give way to one of living our truth and spirituality as we welcome in the coming age of Aquarius. This new age will bring in the energy of transformation and elevate man into higher consciousness. The indigos, crystal, and star children help us usher in the world of higher frequency living as they push forward with their efforts to make us a kinder, gentler species that no longer is held captive by false beliefs, materialism, oppressive governments, fear consciousness, and medical victimization. Just as an embryo lives and grows inside the womb, experiencing a limited existence until it is ready to move into the next phase of life in the outside world, we too are being pushed out of our comfort zones into a world that now gives us the opportunity to experience life from a higher dimension beyond the 3D world. This book is your guide to understanding, troubleshooting, and correcting energy imbalances within your newly evolved existence, and also clues you in on the function of the pineal gland, junk DNA, along with explaining the functions of the often overlooked chakra system, your personal energy spark plugs that tune in your newly evolved psychic senses. This book will open your eyes and make you ask the questions, who created us, and do we have an alien ancestry? So that just really probably sums up the book, but I tell you, it's going to be exciting to talk to you tonight about it.
Great.
So just start in by telling us first how you became aware that you were starseed and that you had these abilities that you have now.
Well, I always felt different as a child, and what some people would call past life memory. I really don't think I was having past life memory. Even at a young age, like 4 years old, I could feel myself shift dimensionally. I was always very creative. I'd like to sit and draw, and I would draw pictures, and the next thing you know, I actually would flip into whatever I was drawing. And I was drawing pictures that had some type of historical significance, and I wasn't yet in school. Now I'm drawing pyramids, and I didn't even know what a pyramid was, and I was drawing castles and myself on a horseback. And actually, at a very young age, I feel that I had some type of abduction experience. I was about 4 years old. That's where I have my most memories around that age. And I was always tuned in to vibration. I can remember sitting in school and thinking that the teacher was going to ask a certain question 4 or 5 minutes before she would actually ask the question. And to me, it was almost like a game. I thought maybe the other kids sitting around in first and second grade could do it too, but they just weren't talking about it. So then as I got older, I started to become familiar with astrology. I love astrology, and I always felt that, you know, the stars actually are our GPS, they're our guide. They help us code into what's going on. And from that, I also explored divination with tarot, numerology, you name it. Anything to do with the mystical arts, it seemed like it just flowed through my veins. Till eventually, it brought me to the point where I felt that I needed to write a few books to let other people know, like, hey, we all have these abilities, but it's just a matter of tuning into them and using them for our self-discovery so we could further advance in consciousness.
Well, that pretty well sums it up about, you know, from early age, when you have something that happens that early on, you know that you came in probably with, the pure consciousness of where you just came from. So that's great and wonderful. So tell us a little bit about the shift that you're talking about with the Milky Way galaxy that you talk about in your book.
Well, the way I'd like to explain it so everyone can get a visual on it, planet Earth has not been staying stationary within the heavens. I mean, we've been moving and moving and moving, and now we're moving into what I like to call the inner neighborhoods of the galaxy. And as we move closer to the black hole, which is really just a very dense mass of exotic matter that is so dense it doesn't even let light come out, there are all types of stars, clusters of stars around this black hole, the center of the Milky Way galaxy, which give off a frequency, and scientists have identified radio frequencies coming from these star systems. So as planet Earth moves closer in proximity to the center of the Milky Way galaxy, we're actually starting to pull in this new wave of energy. And it does have a direct effect on us. It's just like if you go outside and it's windy out, your hair is going to blow around. Well, you know, we're on this planet, and what affects this planet does eventually get trickled down to us. And what we have coming from the galactic center are torsion waves, and they travel at a super radiant speed, and they do have an effect on psi ability and psi energy. As a matter of fact, there have been scientists, and I mentioned one, Nikola, I think it's Korsajev, I hope I'm not mutilating his name, but he did studies where he found these torsion waves from the galactic center will activate our psi abilities. So knowing all this and reading all this, I really felt compelled to let me put out a book, because I feel at this time, as we go through this dimensional shift, a lot of people are going to be activating their what they call junk DNA and their, you know, ancestry from the stars, their natural abilities to tune in. And there really needs to be a guide, because this information has been so hidden, and it has been demonized and made, you know, into daily horoscopes. And we never really get the full understanding that this is a very serious science, or should I say it's a history, because it actually chronicles where we came from and where we're headed.
Okay, that really gives us kind of a thumbnail of where you're coming from. Tell us a little bit about how the past lives, which actually sometimes are parallel lives, influence our consciousness.
Well, what we're finding as we shift dimensionally, here is when we stay in the three-dimensional consciousness, which was basically what I like to call our very safe playground, because we were not yet ready to be activated to these new energies. We weren't mature enough consciously. What happens is, as we shift dimensionally, we find out that time collapses. Our relationship with time is going to be very different. It's going to be redefined by more of a relationship with frequency and light. And we know ourselves when, look at the internet, how you just type in a word and it immediately can reach someone at a great distance away. This is what's going to happen to our thoughts. So as time collapses, we're no longer going to realize past, present, I mean past and future. It's only the present. It's the now moment. So past lives, or which I prefer to call parallel lives, are still existing. They're still running. And what we have to do, which is very important at this juncture in the shift, any past life blips or parallel life blips that we have, like where we find ourselves repeating certain patterns, attracting the same type of people, we need to clear this out as we ascend. And what we have to do is, this is like an awareness that, you know, we are energy, and we have an electromagnetic field around us, and we do pull in the codes from the stars. And what we have to do is, like, anything that from a past life that is not meant to be carried forward with us as we ascend, we need to transmute that energy into just something that's, you know, more neutral, and instead of, like, what I like to call the emotional baggage that we sometimes carry around with us that really does stop us from moving forward.
You talk about birthmarks and phobias that sometimes are clues to past parallel lives. Can you give us a little example of something that you found with that?
I love that. When I was doing the research for the book, I came across some interesting studies by a Dr. Ian Stevenson, who studied birthmarks and past lives, and he was affiliated with the University of Virginia. And what he would do with children, have a very good recollection of their prior incarnations until they reach the age of logic and they go to school, and that kind of is shut down because they're not, you know, really encouraged to talk about such things. They're led to believe it's just imagination. Well, anyway, he found that children who remembered prior incarnations, if they died a certain way, if they were in a fire, a lot of these kids had a port wine birthmark stain. Or if they, say, were wounded by gunfire in maybe, the Civil War, they would have a birthmark on the spot where they received a shot. And he concluded that energy leaves an imprint. And what it does, this imprint maybe was a trauma from a prior incarnation. It's still encoded in the electromagnetic field. So when we come back again into this dimension of consciousness, that code is still held within our electromagnetic field and will show up as a birthmark. So I was even more interested after I read about Dr. Stevenson, because it verified something that I was told years ago. I'm going to go back maybe 35 years ago when I had a past life regression with a man named Dr. Nash, who I'm sure has since passed away because he was in his 80s when he did my regression. He told me, and you know, this is, we're just face-to-face, he said, I carried a mark on my back to show where I was stabbed in the back when I was sitting in a scriptorium as a monk writing some sacred text down. And I do, I have a birthmark on my back shoulder blade, which totally amazed me. Then another thing he told me, he said, he knew I had a phobia. He said, you have a fear of birds. Once again, I was speechless. He knew this. And he said, this phobia, it's in marked, he said, it's all over your energy field. You were beheaded, and he told me it was around 1533, 1534, he said, because I was dabbling in the mystical arts, and to make an example of me, they beheaded me and put my head on a stake at the entry to the city gates, and the birds pecked at my flesh, which I know it's not too appetizing to hear that, but that is where I was carrying this fear, this phobia. So it makes us all realize that our electromagnetic field around us, our aura, whatever you want to call it, is basically like the hard drive of a computer where we're downloading all types of information. But now, at this time during the shift, it's time for us to be very discerning and realize like what we want to keep and what we need to put into neutral. You know, certain things cannot be carried forward because the vibration is too heavy for us to ascend.
Yes. Oh, that makes so much sense about what you said about birthmarks and phobias. That's just, that is so clear to me. Can you give us some examples about patterns and synchronization and how they're related and what part do they play with our shift in evolution?
That's so interesting. What I find, especially with my clients that call me, a lot of them are just starting to open up now, and you know, they're very aware, and the first thing that they become aware of are number patterns. I guess they are the baby blocks of the universe to get us acquainted with synchronicity and messages and encoded messages. The universe isn't going to speak to us in out-and-out words, so when we need to download some type of information, it's going to be given to us as a code in numbers. Now, certain numbers mean certain things to certain people. I'm sure everyone listening can somehow relate to maybe common numbers and an address or a phone number or birthday that seem to follow them around. That is their personal code. And, as, of course, we all know that 1111, that is the universal code for, like, shifting and awakening. And more you see people noticing, oh, I looked at the clock and it was 1111, it was 1111. That's kind of prompting us. That's a prompt to, like, shift. We're downloading something. And even though nobody here on Earth plane is telling us what we're downloading something from a higher consciousness, a higher civilization, higher beings in the universe. So we can ascend, because if you don't evolve and you don't change, you're going to die. And that's just a fact of nature. And we are all one with nature. We're all energy. So we're all interconnected and we're all interrelated. But certain numbers will be synchronistically shown to us when we need a certain message. And then we may find that the more aware we become and we start to live in this state of awareness, we find that, okay, we're thinking of a certain book we need. We just so happen to bump into a person who has the book, lends us the book, and it's magical. Once you link in to this vibration and you allow yourself to, like, be open to the new energy coming in, your life really does become magical.
Yeah, I noticed that synchronization is confirmation. It's a phrase that I use quite often. It's just amazing how that once you tap into it, it will just start revealing itself, whether it's numbers, patterns, a phrase that someone may say, and it's like a tapestry of a story that if you know how to follow the prompts, it will bring you some incredible experiences.
Exactly.
What are some of the physical symptoms of the shift to a higher frequency that you talk about in your book?
Well, as we shift, as we start to shift into a higher frequency, the physical body, which is more dense and heavy, sometimes, you know, is going to feel some of the residual energy as a strange ache or pain or as a symptom. I've noticed a lot of people feel weird pains in their feet. I for one, had it, and I've heard, oh, my gosh, I can't even tell you how many other people, dozens, tell me that every now and then they'll get a weird pain in their foot. That is because the whole body is actually contained in the foot. And anyone who's familiar with Oriental medicine or foot reflexology knows that certain points of the body are carried within the foot and also in the tongue. So as our codes are being reset, as this new energy is coming in, we may feel a jolt, which means we're actually moving forward and upward. A lot of people who don't have heart conditions will experience bouts of tachycardia, which is a fast heartbeat. That's because what we have to realize is as our chakra center is changing, like I said, that's the spark plugs for us. That's also the astral layer. It takes care of the heart chakra. So when we're pulling in this more peaceful type of energy, it's very common to have bouts of tachycardia. Now, of course, if you have a medical condition or a history of heart problems, always see a cardiologist. But if you're fine and you renal, then you experience this, that's all it is. It's part of the shift. And headaches are big, especially as the pineal gland is opening up. It's very common to get a headache right between the eyes and also the top of your head because the crown chakra, that's almost like opening the hatch to let the enlightenment or the more light in. So these are some of the symptoms. And basically, there are a lot of like what are flu-like symptoms, which we call psi flu, because you're opening up to your psychic extrasensory abilities. And they're called extrasensory because we're already aware of the five physical senses. But now we have to be aware that our lighter body has the extra senses that are really going to bring us through and show us how to be very vibrationally tactile in the higher dimensions.
You know, this past week, I had something very unusual happen. I had four different people tell me that they were having these strange sounds, mostly in their left ear, and a lot of pain in that ear. And you know, when I get four people in 1 week that's saying that, I know there's really something going on with the star seeds and the abilities to pick up signals and frequencies. Have you been hearing about this in the last few weeks or so about people with hearing problems, and also that sounds are getting so loud they feel like they need to put in earplugs?
Exactly. As a matter of fact, in the Book of Transformation, when I list all the symptoms, one of them was tinnitus of ascension, because it's very common. You're tuning in now. You're more aware, so you're more sensitive to these frequencies coming in. And I've heard that too about, you know, you just don't know what it is. It's a high-pitched noise. Sometimes it's a buzz. And it's not tinnitus. It's really we're tuning into these frequencies coming in as we shift. And also blurry vision. A lot of people who have had pretty normal vision tell me, like, why does my vision go off and on? It's blurry, then it's okay, then it's blurry. That's because as we get more accustomed to using our third eye, our sensing eye, sometimes, occasionally, they will shut down our regular vision a little bit, so we become accustomed to sensing more with the third eye. It doesn't mean your vision's going to stay that way. It will adjust back, and I've experienced that myself often on blurry vision. It goes away. Go to the eye doctors. Nothing's wrong. It's just part of the shift. Of course, you can't tell your eye doctor that because some of them are still stuck in the science, which is very limited just to the material world. And they're not yet ready to make that jump in quantumly into what's going on above that.
Yeah, I agree. The medical field really has a long ways to go to try to understand those of us that are starseed on the planet.
Exactly.
I'd like to see someone specialize, a medical doctor specialize in starseed symptoms. Wouldn't that be something?
Oh, that would be great, because quantum everything is going to be the way to go, from quantum computers to quantum medicine to quantum healing.
Right. On page 133 in your book, I noticed that you talk about higher alien civilizations. What do you believe that there was an intervention with this civilization in creating man? Would you expound on that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's even in the ancient Sumerian text, they even talk about other beings coming here to see this planet. You know, originally, you know, we had Atlantis here, and from what I was told by someone who actually does a lot of research into UFOs and abductions, that, you know, a lot of the visitors to this planet saw it as one huge petri dish, possibly, you know, a playground to, you know, do experiments and see what they could come up with. But around that time, that's when, you know, naturally on this planet, there were animals and there were, you know, ape-like men, I guess you would call them Cro-Magnon, and they decided what they wanted to do is genetically see what would happen if they mixed some of their DNA with the DNA of the naturally occurring, you know, life here on this planet. And not only did they genetically engineer man, because even in the Bible it says there were two creations, pointing to the first Adam or Adam, which they actually say it in the old text, was a failure because he was a hybrid and he, just like a mule can't reproduce, he couldn't reproduce. And what they were trying to do was to see if they could make a lesser race of people almost as a servant or to help supplement their work that they were doing here. Because this was a terrestrial planet. There's a lot of land that had to be worked and toiled and mined. So that's what they originally were trying to do. But they even got a little bit more creative. And what happened is they decided to sleep with their creations, and they started to mate. And what happens is we do have their DNA. We were a genetically designed civilization, and that's an ancient text. And a lot of religions want us to think that some, you know, just one God, not the God of the universe, just waved his finger and made a man. That's the allegory. The truth of the matter is we were genetically designed to be here. And they've been keeping a watchful eye on us, and they know that in order for this planet to survive this shift in the galaxy, I mean, we're going from, you know, first gear into third gear. So if we don't want to be jolted and, you know, have problems here on Earth, they're very, very watchful how we are going to handle this shift into the inner dimensions of the galaxy. So actually, you could say our ancestors are watching us and watching over us, too.
Yes, I've been tracking that exactly through these astrological charts that show some of the people that are back from Atlantis, and you and I talked about that last night. Tell us a little bit about how you think our DNA is changing.
Oh, definitely. When, you know, they did the genome project, they found that there are, you know, what we think only the two strands of our DNA, and it codes to protein. But to take it a step further, scientists call it junk DNA because they're not yet sure what, you know, these other strands of our DNA do. But now they're finding that they code to frequency and light. And in their studies, they find that what we call prayer or the repetition of certain words actually have a vibrational effect on these other strands of DNA, which respond more to light and frequency. So as we move into these inner areas of the galaxy, we're going to be exposed to stronger star systems and stronger frequencies from the stars out there. Especially there are three stars in the constellation of Aquarius that are very bright and have a very strong magnitude. And maybe that's what they said, the coming dawn of the age of Aquarius, the age of enlightenment. What's going to happen is these extra strands of our DNA are suddenly going to be activated the same way as if you have an iPhone and you may have an application on it, but you cannot yet activate it until, you know, they tell you you can. This is what's going on with us. We're already pre-wired for all of these abilities, but until we move where we're supposed to be and we can tune into that frequency, we're just starting to shift a little at a time, and our DNA is changing. And we can see it in the new children, what we call the indigos, the, you know, the rainbow children, the crystal children, the star children. These kids already come, already activated. They're already in tune. They are already pulling in this frequency, and their DNA is already upgraded. Some of them have 12-strand DNA, and as we evolve, they even believe we'll go to 24-strand DNA activation.
Yeah, I agree. These new kids that are coming in, and they've been coming in for some time. I've been tracking a particular group that started coming in around 1980, 81, 82, 83, and just the past two or three months, I would say that most of the new clients that I have were born during those years, and I think that's really quite interesting to see that particular group starting to awaken and find Starseed Hotline.
And I noticed they even look a little different, like physically. Their physical bodies seem to be a little different also. Just from my own observation, I noticed that the men, if you look around, a lot of guys seem like at an earlier age where their hair is becoming more sparse. And I noticed that, you know, and it's like, wow, you know, are guys going bald earlier? But then, you know, further looking at it, it's, no, their brains are different. Their hard drive is different. They bring in different information. They do have almost a more, I guess you could say, like a pure look to them also. They have a different look, especially if you look at their eyes.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. I noticed one of the questions that you had here was, what is a psi ball? That intrigues me. What is a psi ball?
Well, a lot of times I'll have clients that are just starting to go through the shift, and they realize that as their personal life starts to collapse, maybe they're leaving a marriage, a relationship, or a job, or a friendship, they don't know why, and I go, okay, that's because you're pulling in new energy, and you have to get used to how to adapt to this energy and what it feels like. So what I tell them to do, and this really helps them because now they know what energy feels like. Just like a baby learns what's hot and what's cold by touching it, I teach them to touch energy. I tell them to hold their hands about a foot and a half apart, as if they were holding a beach ball or maybe a basketball. And none of this rubbing your hands together to cause friction, but just to hold their hands apart and hold them there for a few seconds. And they're going to start to feel the energy build between their hands. And as they do that, I tell them, okay, now round it out a little bit like you're actually feeling the shape of a ball or a sphere. And I have them tell me it feels warm, it feels cool, and they start getting the sensation. Then I tell them to visualize a color in the psi ball. You know, green is for healing if you want to toss it towards a plant. If you're upset, make it blue. If you want to tune into your psychic abilities, make it more of a purple you. And, I in the book I list the different colors, and colors also have a vibration, and they have a meaning also. So let's say green. Well, we're going to make it green. So you shoot it in with green. And after you feel comfortable with it, just toss it the way you would toss a ball. Toss it towards a plant or anything you want to give healing to. You will actually see the sparks of energy, just like almost like little stars, start to come down at your target. You're getting used to sensing energy, seeing energy, feeling energy, and working with energy. And that's a real good tool for anyone who, you know, and then as you get more accustomed to what energy feels like, eventually you're going to be able to walk into a room, and if there's a group of people in there, be more discerning as to what energy you want to commingle your energy with, and you start to be able to download different information from people you come in contact with.
Oh, I love that exercise. That's wonderful.
And it really works, and it's fun.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
If I can interject here, it's really interesting, Lisa, because I don't know if you remember, Paul Esch used to do that. It was a friend of ours from many years ago. And he was teaching to make this, you're calling it a psi ball, and the thing that he had that was a little bit different that kind of accelerated that, and I'm just sitting here doing it while you're talking. You imagine you have like a beach ball, but if you make your hands go in and out towards each other in a way, almost like you're like doing a squeeze box thing really fast,
yeah.
you can densify, you can make that energy get really strong, and if you do your hands like a like bicycle pedals in circles, in front of you, and then back and forth, you can get this ball like really infused with a very stronger and stronger energy with this movement. But it's that exact same thing, and projecting the color then into it, and for whatever the need of the moment may be. I think that's fabulous.
You know what's interesting too? I've had a lot of people say, "Well, how does someone like Uri Geller? How does he bend a spoon?" Well, what it is, it's he knows how to communicate with energy because everything that exists here in the physical, dimension also exists in the higher dimensions too. You know, there's a it's almost like a hologram, so it does exist. So when you learn how to communicate with the energy, you can actually change its vibration to make a spoon melt. Of course, that comes with a lot of practice and a lot of skill, and you know, you have to do it coming from the right consciousness. But like I said, this is great. We are like these young offspring who are ready to come out of the playpen, and we're going to start to, move up to like the toys of the older kids instead of the baby toys we've been playing with in the material world, just so we can get used to the dense energy. Now we're moving up to the lighter energy.
Yes, and, I spent some time with Uri Geller years ago and a lot of time with André Pouart, who actually brought Uri to the United States. And the long and the short of it, Uri Geller was, he was an ET experiment. He was genetically engineered to do exactly what he did.
That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. No doubt about it. So now let's move to another subject. Let's talk about spontaneous and unassisted healing. Can you give us some examples of something that you've witnessed with this?
I've had it done to myself where I would go. I love Reiki because Reiki is, once again, it's how to communicate with energy and move energy blocks. And we're starting to realize we are energy. You know, it's this lighter shell of us that surrounds the physical form that we really need to become familiar with and work with as we download all of this new frequency coming in from our proximity within the heavens. I've had major sinus headaches where I would just take my hands, and I was shown how to do this, and hold my hands on my temples and just start to move my fingers in a circular motion and just do it for a few seconds, clockwise, then counterclockwise, then clockwise again. And as I'm doing that, I'm communicating with this energy to release. I've had this done. I've done it to myself where suddenly the headache, it breaks. My nose starts to run, and whatever was blocking my sinuses is gone. Because as we know, everything that happens to us physically starts out first as a vibration. And if we don't catch it when it's in that vibration stage, it manifests as an actual physical symptom so we can see it. And I've had people say, well, what about like cancer? There have been many people who healed themselves from cancer. And there's documented cases of it because it's how you communicate with your cells constantly talk to each other. They're in constant communication with vibration. And when you're stressed out, you're lowering that frequency. And when you know that you're working with, you're communicating with yourself, your higher self, your energy, you can reprogram yourself. And Raymond Rife, he used to work with frequency to help cancer patients overcome their cancer. And my own personal experience was my youngest son, they told me he had epilepsy, and it didn't feel right. I didn't buy into that. And what I did through just my own meditation, I knew which way to go with him, and I tried my own routine thanks to the Edgar Cayce's book of natural healing. And I just kind of energetically felt what he needed was just a regime of vitamins, less stress, and I changed his diet a little bit. And when I brought him back to the doctors, he was neurologically perfect is what they told me, and they don't know what I did, but they said just be glad that it worked, and they sent us home. So we can all do this. We all have the ability to heal, just like when we get sick, we're usually the cause of our own illness too.
Yeah, that's true. What is your experience with vibrational medicine?
Well, vibrational medicine, this is going to be the new way to go, because everything in our body has a frequency. Every organ of the body has its own frequency, and once again, referring back to Eastern medicine is more aware of this. You know, the frequency of the ascending colon, the descending colon, and the body, I feel, when it's in its perfect state, I believe it's about 65 megahertz. So this is telling us we're very electrical. And when it drops, you know, when it gets to maybe like, you know, 55, we may leave ourselves wide open for chronic fatigue syndrome. When it gets down to 30-something, we leave ourselves wide open to allow the cancer vibration to come about. And if it gets real low, that means, you know, we're almost, the plug is going to be pulled on us cosmically. But the new form of medicine is going to be quantum medicine, where we are just not healing the physical body. We're addressing the energy body, where a lot of this starts. It's almost like having a bad spark plug in your car, your engine's not running right. You know, you have to identify what's going on. You know, and our spark plugs are our chakras. And this is where we pull in all of this new energy and a lot of the codes that we're getting cosmically. They're coming in through our personal spark plug system. And this is great because as we shift, if we're aware that we need to, like, keep ourselves attuned and through such things as Reiki or any other form of energy medicine that maybe, you know, vibes to your own personal frequency, this helps you to understand quantum healing and vibrational medicine.
I notice on page 184 you talk about the different diets that we go through as we shift and process through our evolution. Can you expand on that?
Okay, well, we are definitely what we eat. I find that, personally, a lot of people who are going through this shift start to crave foods that are high in vitamin B, such as maybe oatmeal, because our nerves are like wires. In the physical body, they're like wires. So the vitamin B actually acts as an insulator to our personal nervous system or our personal wiring. So as you shift, you may find suddenly you want, you need something to ground you out a little bit more. So maybe you're going to eat oatmeal because that has a lot of vitamin B. Actually, I think I wrote about a woman who went through that. But food has a vibration to it. And a lot of people think, that's crazy. It doesn't. It does. Just like the experiments that were done by the Japanese guy who showed that water, how it reacts to different vibrations. You know, an apple that is grown organically is a totally different vibration than one that's been processed with pesticides and shot up with all different things to make it grow bigger. So what you put into your body is equivalent to the gas that you put in your car. You know, you're only going to be as vibrationally good as what you put in. And some people actually switch their diets. Foods that you never liked before, you may suddenly crave. And vice versa, foods that you used to love, you may be turned off to. A lot of people find they can't carry the vibration of meat anymore because it's a heavy vibration. A lot of it has to do with the way that the animal is slaughtered and killed. And we're so sensitive to vibration now that this is even carried through into the food that we eat. A lot of people are opting to eat more like free-range chicken instead of chicken that's been caged up, and the anguish and stress that the animal must feel is carried over into the flesh, and then we consume it.
You know, we talk a lot about silica in sessions with our clients, and we have a little section on our website about it. And one of the things that's really high in silica is oatmeal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, silica is something that's being depleted now because we're sitting in front of computers or our cell phones. They just fry the silica right out of us. So we're always talking to our clients about, please infuse your body with more silica.
Oh, really?
So that's
yeah,
good
really.
That you mentioned oatmeal. Okay, to change
yeah.
the subject a little bit, being an astrologer, I noticed that on page 196, you talk about the significance of a 13th sign of the zodiac. What is that?
Well, as we know, there are many different constellations out there, and I've been doing astrology since I was 14, and I always went the 12 signs of the zodiac. That's what I was taught, and when I did my charts, that's what I used. But as we started to move closer to the shift, I knew there was a big controversy over the 13th sign of the zodiac, so which led me to research it a little bit more, like why don't we use it, why was it taken out? It is a sign of very short duration. It's called a ficus. And what it is, this sign falls between Scorpio and Sagittarius. Now, the constellation of Sagittarius is right there at the galactic center. This ficus, this, you know, a sign of short duration, has a lot of meaning to it. Actually, in astrology, the eighth house is the house of death, and the ninth house is the house of spirituality. But between death and spirituality, there is a small transition, and this is what we're going through right now, this shift. Because the story of Ficus was that he was murdered by his brother and his body was cut up into 13 parts, and that his wife collected all the parts, although she could not, I think, find his private parts, kind of like a Lorena Bobbitt type of a deal. And so we're told that we are going to transform and that we are going to, you know, regenerate, not necessarily, you know, sexually, but more spiritually. So we're going through a transformation, and I think it's a very interesting sign because of the story behind it, the fact that it's a short duration. So that's showing that, okay, we're coming down the birth canal right now, you know, and we're going through the labor of being basically brought into the higher elements of the galaxy. So maybe this is just the quick, you know, 1-2 punch before we are reborn again into the natural ninth house, our true spirituality, not meaning religious dogma, but meaning our nature, because our nature is to be very spiritual, meaning electromagnetic and of energy and of frequency and light.
You know, I haven't seen any software in astrology that has this. Have you seen it?
Well, actually, when I was researching it, I was told, I think I put an example in the book, how we always have the 12 around one, the 12 apostles around the one Christ, the 12 numbers around the one clock. But what is it, the significance of this 13? You know, when I was researching it, some said that it was taken out by some early on popes who didn't want it in there. It's hidden knowledge. It's forbidden knowledge. And this sign would not resurface until it was time for it to be recognized, which kind of like the mysticism behind it. I know a lot of astrologers are upset because my software doesn't have it in there either. And I sometimes look to see in a chart when I'm dealing with a client, if someone's going through a very, like what they think is a difficult time, I look to those degrees, the late degrees, Scorpio, early degrees, Sagittarius, where a ficus would be, if there's any activity going on there now by a planet transiting it or any aspects to that area, and I could see they're going through their personal transition, which I like, and I wish they would incorporate it because, it, like I said, it's a sign of short duration, and traditional astrologers don't want to confuse their clients any more than they're probably already confused. And what are they going to do with the daily horoscopes in the paper? So they're all worried about the wrong thing, but I think as we move more into the esoteric astrology, we're going to eventually incorporate the sign.
Well, what comes to mind is those late degrees of Scorpio. Those are some of the star markings that I've been tracking with the Pleiadian lineup.
Right, right. So they're here to help us through this transition.
Yeah. So I'm noticing it's O-P-H-I-U-C-H-U-S. And how do you pronounce that?
Ophicus.
Ophicus. I think that's very interesting. I'm just going to look into that a little bit more. That's just fascinating.
Yeah, and you wonder, why was it hidden? Why was he taken out? You know, and if you look in the heavens, you'll see that this constellation, it does exist, and it fits right in there, and there's some major stars in it. So it's not like it's a minor constellation where we could say, well, it's just a little blip in the system. It actually has a frequency to it, and we're starting to code, because as we move closer to that galactic center, you know, that December 21st, 2012, you know, we're going to pass through Ophicus before we get into that part of Sagittarius, and, you know, I often wondered, like, wow, is this where we're going to start downloading, you know, like we just got a new Apple iPad or something. We're just going to really be ready for this shift.
And I'm wondering also, say if a person's born with their Venus and Mars in that area, that's probably indicative of having all their male and female all in one body.
Yeah, because as we know, the Atlanteans, they were both male and female, or they were both attuned to their male and their female nature. You know, that's what they say of the first Atlanteans that came here, you know, the duality within the one.
Wow. Okay, to the next question on page 202. How does the precision of the equinox into the constellation of Aquarius turn on the dormant codes within our DNA?
Well, the interesting thing is, as we move towards this constellation of Aquarius, we're coming out of the age of Pisces, where, you know, that was all about spirituality and mysticism and organized religion. But as we move towards the constellation of Aquarius, there's this frequency that we're going to get from, there are these three strong stars, and the ancients know them. There are certain fixed stars in the heaven, and as you know, one of them is Algol, which is 24, 26 stars in the Pleiades constellation. So these stars have been with us, and the ancients used them. But the ancients would use this star. It was called Alpha Aquarii, which they called it Satamalek, which is a supergiant star and has a diameter 100 times that of the sun. Then there's also Beta Aquarii, which they called Sal de Sud, and that's the brightest single star of the constellation. That shines at a magnitude of 2.9. And then finally, there's Gamma Aquarii, which they call Saddle, I think, a Chabia, which is a super, tropic binary that shines at a magnitude of 3.8. And actually, their Arabic names translate as the luck of the kings, the luck of the lux, and the lucky star of hidden things. So once we get into this frequency, I mean, this is like getting a couple new cable channels on your TV. We're going to be able to tune into this. And what that's going to do, the luminosity of these stars is about 25 of our suns. And the intensity of this light is going to further activate the additional strands of our DNA, the parts that code to frequency and light. I mean, this is the new science intertwined with the new history. And I don't even think that, you know, traditional scientists can really deny the fact that we're basically starting to identify with the spirit code or the God gene in our genetic makeup.
Sounds like to me you've been aboard ship and got a huge download so that you could come back and write this book.
It was crazy because when I was writing this book.
Okay, now I want to go to another question.
Hang on. Lisa was just about to say something there.
No, I was just going to say, since I was writing this book, there were actually times when I would sit back and be like, I wasn't even going in this direction consciously. Did I just, like, somehow channel myself to flip into this information? Like, I would be thinking, I'd have my layout on one side, like, I'm going to go from this point to this point, and then somehow I'm winding up with, you know, the Arabic fixed stars in the sky. And I'm like, okay, this is probably information that people need, and we'll just put that in there somewhere.
That's just kind of how it happened.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that you, of course, believe in UFOs, and can you explain their recent appearance that's happening now?
Well, we're ready now. You know, we need this intervention, because if anything happens to this planet, we're going to throw off the whole ecosystem of the galaxy, and it's going to affect them. They don't want to see this planet go under. They've spent too much time trying to perfect us and help us. And just look at where we've come from with technology. Look how long it took us to get from the wheel to the car. But then look at the amount of time it took us to get from the car to, like, rocket ships. So we're accelerating, and somebody here out there is helping us and giving us this information. So when I was researching Chapter 8, which I deal with, you know, we do have galactic neighbors. We have to stop being so narcissistic to believe that we are the only life out in this vast universe. How could that possibly be? I mean, star systems out there actually have terrestrial planets around them. So we have to give way. Yes, we do have galactic neighbors. So when I was researching, you know, my information for Chapter 8, and I was going into the different ley lines on the Earth and what happens and such things as the Devil Triangle and portals, and I interviewed the one guy, Jeffrey Silman, and he told me, I said, well, how do they do this? Do they travel like light years? How do you explain this in a book? He said, no, they're advanced, and they shift dimensionally. They know how to shift dimensionally, which we're all working up to. We're going to learn how to do this too. So when we see a big ship, it's how come people will have a sighting, they'll be like, I saw the ship, and then suddenly it disappeared, because they know how to shift dimensionally. So I feel that there's going to be more frequent sightings of the ships as we move closer to this galactic center, because there are a lot of star clusters right there, and there means there's a lot of activity, and it's a densely populated neighborhood. That's the inner city. So we're moving in there. So I feel that they're going to be like almost our welcome wagon to help us transition into this new belt of plasma that we're moving into. And there will be some Earth changes, and I also feel they're here to help us through that too, to understand how the planet is, you know, shifting and going through the changes too. This is a total rebirth. And even in the Bible, they say there will be a new heaven and a new earth. The old earth will pass away. What it just means, we're going to let go of that outer shell that's been keeping us captive, and we're going to reveal the inner core of what this planet's supposed to be and who we're supposed to be.
I noticed that you talk a lot in your book about the pineal gland and how it had a personal stargate to higher dimensions. Can you elaborate?
This is great. At one time, the ancients knew that this gland was the size of a lemon, and it was always replicated in ancient artwork, as they would draw a picture of the pine cone. And even in the Vatican Square, they have that huge, I think it's called the Garden of the Pignola, which they show this huge pine cone. So, and the Masons used it a lot for symbolism and the different things they did, the Freemasons. So what it is atrophied over the year because it was shut down because we weren't ready to ascend. Plus, too, you know, we were taught that we don't have these abilities, so it atrophied. Plus, too, there's been, I believe, that maybe almost a conspiracy to keep us shut down, because fluoride is the worst thing for this gland. It's like having sand in your eyes. And it basically will calcify this gland, so you won't be able to use it. But as we shift, and if, you know, we're very conscious and we're aware that, you know, fluoride can do this to this gland, and we're more conscious of how we open up, this gland is what's going to be like our master tuner, and it's going to pull in the frequency that we need that's going to, like, filter through the rest of our chakra system, which are the energy points on our spiritual and physical body, where we pull in all the codes and all the light coming in from the cosmos. And this is our personal stargate. When you have this gland fully activated, it will assist you in clairvoyance, it will give you your extrasensory perception, and it also enables you to have the out-of-body experience, which means you're able to let a certain part of your body shift away from the physical body, which, as I was told, like a lot of the visitors, which we call the aliens, or, you know, the ETs, sometimes when we see them, it's like they don't want to send their physical form because they don't want to contact any of our viruses or our germs. So what they will do is they will project a portion of themselves, astrally project themselves, when they deal with people, the same way that a ninja or someone who's very well-versed in mind control can actually, they say, a ninja is capable of being invisible. It means he can physically be in front of you, but he can allow a portion of his aura, his electromagnetic field, to project where he's needed. And that actually happened in my book. I wrote about how certain people would have visits. There was a pope who was on his deathbed, and a certain saint appeared to him. At the time, the saint was a priest. He was not yet made a saint. And they figured, how could he visit him? He was miles and miles away. But because he was needed, he was able to astrally project a part of himself. So that, which all along, which we have been taught, were like saints, were really, I believe, ETs that were here that came at certain times to help us get through difficult periods as we went through the Dark Ages, the Renaissance, the Industrial Age. Now we're here, the Age of Technology, and I believe the next age is the Age of Enlightenment.
You know, last night when you and I were talking, one of the things that I did not share with you is that I was born with a double pineal, and I came to know that I lived in one, and they came in and went through the other.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do you think other people have that, or it's not yet been revealed, I guess?
Well, there were 12 of us that were designed that way, and we weren't all born at the same time on the planet. And just the other day, I got an email from a lady that says, I think I'm one of the other beings that have a double pineal. So they may start surfacing for me now. Who knows?
I love it.
At this time, we've gone through the first hour, and at this time, I would like to thank you so much, Lisa, for being our guest. And I'm going to now turn over the program to Ariel and the switchboard for questions. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
God. Well, Lisa, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the pineal gland, and you might have heard of this, or you could tell me if it's valid or not. You know, we have a forum where we have almost 800 starseeds that support each other, and one of them submitted a video for offsetting the effects of fluoride, which, you know, we all get from many sources, but I guess
right.
Mainly toothpaste. And he says if your pineal has become affected in that way, and he showed this exercise where he had his hands like in the general area of the top but back of his head, and he was doing this with his index and middle finger, almost like you were snapping your fingers, but he was tapping on the back of his head by pushing. It's kind of hard to describe on the radio, but it was like almost like if your fingers were scissors and you were sliding one off the other and it's hitting your head. And this tapping, he said, helps to break up that calcification, that hardening of the pineal gland. What do you think of that?
I definitely can resonate to that. I feel that he's just showing you how to, you know, energetically move that along, because, like I said, everything is energy. Everything we deal with in the physical world actually also exists in the energy world. So he's dealing with this on an energy level. That's a lot like when I get acupressure at least once a week, because I feel that they hit my reset buttons. Because when you do this type of work and you deal with the public, sometimes you accidentally, no matter how much you protect yourself, you maybe download some of their stuff too, so you have to constantly clear. And I noticed that after I go for acupressure, which is where they push on certain points of your body, it's not acupuncture with the needles, when they're done, they'll take a tapping motion, and they'll tap all along too. And one time I asked, I said, what is the tapping for? And they said it was a clearing, just to clear out, and anything, any energy buildup, it will shatter it and just release it. So that's interesting you say that. I'd love to see that video. And the fluoride thing, it's crazy. My youngest son, the one who they thought had epilepsy that I spoke about earlier, when he was 4 years old, he had some dental problems, and I took him to the dentist, and he was screaming in there, and the dentist came out, and I said, what's wrong? He said, he keeps screaming that no fluoride, no fluoride. He wanted to give him a fluoride treatment. So I said, well, don't give it to him if he doesn't want it then, if he doesn't need to. And I'm thinking this kid must have come in already knowing that this was bad. Because
mm-hmm.
he is very, very intuitive and psychic, but he doesn't walk around like he's psychic and reads minds, but he's very intuitive, has a good sense, and he was always more advanced for his age. So there is something to
wow.
that fluoride. I really believe there's something to the fluoride.
Right, yeah, and I don't know that who thought of that. You know, somebody had some errant lab experiment, and they thought that it
yeah,
was going
to try it.
Yeah, you're going to go, you know, here, this will make everybody's teeth better, but I don't see that. I don't see that it has
no,
anything
no.
but a detrimental effect.
But in some places in well, isn't it in the UK, they don't put fluoride in the water, and they their teeth may suffer a little from that, or maybe they know something we don't know?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that there's the same level of dental awareness as far as, you know, in the UK that, or they do know.
Because that's where
a lot
of the blue bloodlines always seem to have gravitated.
Yeah, well, there is an energy in England that is different from everywhere else. Obviously, I think the vast majority of crop circles are there, and there's a reason for that. And there's an energy about the earth itself with vortexes, or I guess vortices is the correct word, with the ley lines over there, with whatever is under the earth, the frequency. We were in England last month, and I myself totally resonate, and I adore England. And while we were there, we saw three UFOs, and we were only there for 2 days.
Oh,
so,
yeah, they have a lot of activity there.
There's a lot of activity. Lavendar has been talking with a scientist over there who was the reason we went after our trip to France, because he is an aeronautical engineer. His name is T. Roy Dutton, and he has found a pattern for flight paths of UFOs. He's tracked them for, gosh, I mean, since the 60s. And he's come up with this formula and this software and this, you know, mathematical calculation where he can predict timing and location, because there was a pattern to there all the appearances that he had studied over the years. And the reason they got together is because when Lavendar started talking to him, they realized that it was related to her discovery of star markings, and he had the science that backs it up.
Oh, wow.
That the times of heightened activity coincide with the star marking alignments that she'd been tracking. So they've both been tracking, where Lavendar was more from the astrological, the extraterrestrial, the energetic side, and Roy was a strict science engineer, numbers, you know, all, you know, the physical 3D provable.
So it was like the bringing together of the two thoughts, just to, you know, to prove that, yeah, this is happening.
Yeah, yeah,
and
I mean, they dovetailed.
Yeah.
I mean, the research that Roy has done, and the work and the discoveries that Lavendar made completely support each other, which is why they become fast friends, and they talk every week. But while we were there, we saw a crop circle and three UFOs, and that was just in 2 days. So, yeah, there is something.
Does anyone know how to read the codes in the crop circles? Like, that's what I am not well-versed in. I often wondered the symbolism in there. Are they to be linked in somehow to maybe a form you would see in an astrological chart, or You know, like, how do we read the codes? I often wonder that.
Yeah. You know, Lisa, I am not an expert, but we have had experts on the show, and it does, the overall opinion is that these are communications lessons, it's information, and if you were tracking as, well, like Colin Andrews is probably the world's leading expert on crop circles, who has been a guest on our show, that if you went back and look, the complexity has increased. You know, from the first crop circles were just very simple, almost, you know, just geometric designs. And now that we have, now that they have our attention, they're very complex. And I think that the language is a language of symbols, and the information is coded in those symbols. And there are probably many different races that have the technology that can form a crop circle,
right?
And they may have different messages. So saying that, you know, here's the one code to decode all the star, you know, all the crop circles, I don't think that can be said, because, you know, if one is Swahili and Italian and Spanish and English and all these, you know, different types of ET
right.
languages, then there couldn't possibly be a Rosetta Stone for all of them. So then it gets kind of complicated in
it
knowing,
does,
you know.
I remember, too, when I was writing the book, I was asking someone about crop circles. That's when I was getting into the ley lines and the different, you know, PowerPoints on Earth, and I said, Why is there always some type of a cattle mutilation around a crop circle? And what was explained to me is that vibration that comes in so high is what just like it will mutilate, you know, the cattle there, because the vibration is too high, because the consciousness, or just say the electromagnetic field of a cow is, you know, too low of a frequency. So when the higher frequencies come in, you will find mutilated cows, which I thought was interesting. And also over Germany, there's a lot of activity. And they actually have pictures of ships in going over part of Germany. It's a very famous woodcut back in the 15th century. And Alexander the Great had a sighting when he was moving in towards Lebanon back when during his battles. And, of course, the ancient Rama Empire in India saw the starships in the sky. So this has always been with us, but... You know, I really wish there would be more disclosure now, because, you know, when people, you know, start to dimensionally shift and they become aware of these ships, they are going to be freaked out if they're not prepared for what's going to go on.
Well, my opinion on that is that every single person has their own group of guardians, whether, you know, spiritual, fourth dimensional, fifth dimensional, and we have to trust that those guardians will take care of the people, because I don't think that we can rely on the governments ever.
No.
At least in the foreseeable decades, hopefully they will get more truthful, but as we said before in this show, most, I would say 100% of our listeners do not need the government to tell you that the UFOs are no longer unidentified. You know,
exactly.
They are extraterrestrial craft, and that they've been here forever. We all know that anyway. So having the government put a stamp of approval on that is really not, we don't care.
They know it.
I know. I don't care.
They just don't want to tell us. But even, I think, Madame Blavatsky, back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, she was really into the esoteric arts. And, you know, she's difficult to read because she just writes so cryptically. But she used to write about the different brute races and how we were seeded. And it's very interesting. I mean, this information has been with us since the beginning of time, but it has been so diluted. And what happened when, you know, a lot of these false structures came in, everybody tried to, you know, take control, and the way they took control was to bury the truth, you know.
Absolutely.
And so now we're, we're in the age, we're coming out of the age of information and moving into the age of enlightenment, and the computer helped us with that, which, of course, we know that is star technology. You know, somebody had to help us with that, and that just means we can communicate with each other globally, and now the next step is we're going to start communicating galactically, and that's how come our senses like telepathy and clairvoyance all need to be further developed, because if we're going to survive, we have to know how to communicate.
Absolutely. That is so true. And from all my years of training with Lavendar and all the chronicles and experiments that she's been privy to, there are many root races because there are many ETs, as you said, who see this as, I think you used the word, a giant petri dish.
Right.
But this planet is a gem. It is a paradise, a natural paradise, and very attractive to many advanced species who, I mean, when you get to be that advanced, and you think like the Pleiadians, 3,500 years ahead of us in technology, and according to Alex Collier, the Andromedans are 4,700 years ahead of us in technology. When you get to be that advanced and that, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth dimensional light being, what do you do with your time, with
right.
your energy? You don't, you've done everything, so what do? You create your terraformers.
Exactly.
You create
like
world
kids,
and civilization.
They sit and they play like the video games, and they play like the Sims, where they create their own virtual realities almost, but they inject personalities and scenarios. But then we're going to take it to the next level where we are all very creative beings, and like you say, they create. You're absolutely right. I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. And of course, one day in our distant future, thousands of years, each one of us will be taking part in creating, rather than just having the little family unit where you have a couple of kids, your family, you create a world with beings and then raise them up, you
right.
know, just raising up a family on a completely higher level. And I've always figured that's how come they can't find the missing link. Because my even when I was in high school, I'd say, well, if we evolved from the apes, then how come there are still apes?
Exactly.
You
and
know?
There are billions of stars in the sky. I mean, you can't count how many there are. You know, and like I said, a lot of them actually have terrestrial planets that revolve around them in an atmosphere. And you can only imagine what's out there, you know, the higher intelligence, maybe there's even a lower intelligence, but each one is so unique. It's as if you would drive cross country, you're going to run into, you know, every area is so unique and so different. The East Coast is so different than the West Coast. The South is different than the North. And each one is unique and beautiful in their own habits and ways and customs. And this is how we have to take it a step further, because as we advance, you know, galactically, we're going to be exposed to these different galactic neighbors. We
right.
have to know how to communicate, and they communicate through thought frequency. It's a more advanced way. They're not trapped in that three-dimensional consciousness, which is very limited. It's like there's a lid on it. When it's three dimensions, you're in a box with a lid. So when you take the lid off, now you're opened up to higher consciousness, and you get to see what's outside this box.
Mm-hmm. And we can only hope that we have learned our lessons the hard way through, you know, thousands and thousands of reincarnations of learning the difference between up spiral and down spiral. And I'm saying that rather than, you know, right and wrong or good and evil, because those are concepts of duality. But there's up spiral energy that is growing and ascending, and there's down spiral energy that is on the way out. And that's really the only two kinds there are. So as they take the lid off the box, you know, hopefully they will be also there, because they've been here guiding us since we were toddlers and infants, you know, in the Bronze Age.
Right. Once you tune in,
things.
Yes.
And it's
like a home link. You know, when a lot of cars have this home link. I mean, you want to link into them. It's open to us right now because this portal's opening right now. And this is if you want to link in, if you want to allow to accept the codes that are coming in from this frequency, then you're going to get with the program more. And you're right, they've been with us throughout time. We were never left alone, never.
Right, although they do, for the most part, nearly all of the members of the Galactic Federation and I'm always making analogies to Star Trek because Star Trek is so true that it's much truer than a lot of people think. And
even if you
think it's somewhat true, it's even truer than that. But there is a Galactic Federation, and non-interference is the prime directive. So, because what good would an experiment do, if you were controlling all the factors? You have to let things develop and say, okay, that's not working, so we have to think of a way to show them how not to do that anymore.
And the thing that even makes our planet more interesting is if you go by Bode's law, this planet should not even be here. And if you go way, way back into like how Zachariah Sitchin, who deciphered a lot of the ancient Sumerian texts, you know, there was a big watery giant called Tiamat. Because Bode's law means the distance between Venus, you know, and then you double it, then you have the distance between, you know, Mercury and Venus, and then it would be like Venus and Mars. Well, Earth is somehow between Venus and Mars, and how did it get there? Because there at one time was this big watery giant called Tiamat, which ancient Sumerian texts said was cleaved by another passing planet that was very large. And when they cleaved it, it kind of like broke apart and like spun out, and now here we have Earth. And it was a very terrestrial planet with land and water. And like you say, the Galactic Federation saw this, and it's like, this is interesting. This has all the elements, so let's go see what we can do with this planet. You know, and Atlantis was formed, and they started to colonize the planet, and one thing led to another, and there were many experiments on this planet.
Well, as you're saying that, I'm wondering, well, if the planet was cleaved into two parts, is the other part, you know, because there are many, many people that we've had on the show that talk about another Earth that is exactly, across from us on the other side of the sun, so we never get to see it.
Well, I've heard that when we were cleaved that the asteroid belt actually became part of the fragments that flew off, and they're, you know, the asteroid belts are like masses of ice that float around in
mm-hmm.
space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've often believed that we are a binary star system, that if something would happen to our sun, now I know there was a lot of solar activity today. I think I read somewhere on the internet a lot of solar storms, and which is crazy. I can kind of feel those days too, you know.
Right.
It feels different, and sometimes when you look at the sky looks different. Not the jet trails that they put out, but I'm just looking, the sky has a different type of an energy to it. Almost, it's very illuminated. And they were a binary star system that if anything would happen to our sun, should it nova or should it, you know, not, you know, kind of transition well as we get closer to the galactic center, there's another star that would take over. And I believe it was in Norway, wasn't it, a few years ago, where one time they thought they saw the two suns in the sky, and ancient prophecy talks about possibly seeing two suns in the sky.
Well, that's only vaguely familiar,
right.
Not enough for me to speak intelligently about it. But, yes, I mean, we do know that Atlantis was a Pleiadian project, and Lemuria was before Atlantis. And there have been, can't pull the person's name right now, who said there was even the original civilization on Earth was of light beings. And then there was a decision to let's start from scratch and raise up a whole new crop.
Yeah, Edgar Cayce totally, in his reading of the Akashic Records, which is almost a recording of everything that ever went on, he was gifted enough to tap into the Akashic Records, which is like the master recording vault of everything that had transpired.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, you're right, you know, Atlantis at one time, you know, they decided to let's take physical form to see what happens, to really experience this the tactile nature of this planet, not just experience it energetically, but let's see what it feels like to touch a tree and step on the ground. And then we got involved with the emotions, which are almost the, they are a mission center. Like when you take your car for emissions testing, the emotions are emissions testing, you know, for how we're reacting to certain energy, because that's what we react to. We're not reacting to a person. We're reacting to their energy, because words have energy, actions have energy, you know, and it's expressed in a physical form here, so we get it. It's like the baby looking at the picture of an apple to know what an apple is, but eventually you just know. So
right.
Now we're getting up to the knowing part. And someone had told me not too long ago they felt that the Lemurians, actually, after one of the destructions, decided to go inside the Earth, and that there are actually colonies inside the Earth. And I think Madame Blavatsky thought that, and Hitler, I think, also believed that there was an inner Earth colonization still going on, too.
Well, there's lots of myths and legends about that, and I tend to give more credence to myths and legends that are handed down through word of mouth, because you know, the things that have been recorded as historical facts are things that have been written down because it's what they want you to think.
Exactly.
And not necessarily because what really is. And especially with, and you had recalled a lifetime where you were a monk doing writings, because at one time it was the monks and the religious sects of people who were the only ones that could write. They were the scribes, and the common people didn't know how to write. So everything, if you think, that was written down from historical books that still survive in the third dimension, you have to wonder about the agenda of what was written down.
They even knew that, you know, words have a vibration. Every word has a vibration to it, and you know, some say that some beings did not have a mouth because they were not yet godlike and could not create with sound. And back in, I believe it was the medieval times, the original diatonic, the scale, the musical scale, there was something called the solfeggio scale, and they said that certain, like, sounds within that scale, there was one particular hymn, and the name escapes me right now, but this one particular hymn, the sounds could actually create. You could create with sound. So what they did, it's like, let's take out these certain notes and we're just going to have the regular diatonic scale. And I know that women at the time, too, because they were really fearful of the feminine energy, women were not allowed to write music or compose music. And then you had Hildegard von Bingen, who wrote a lot of beautiful chants and her tones. And when you listen to her, you can almost feel that you're having a frequency download somehow, like you're getting a tune-up. It's amazing what sound can do and how we can code to the vibration of even sound. You know, like a lot of drumming, too. I know when I took Reiki, drumming was really good for, like, resetting a lot of the codes that are in our DNA also. So there's so much for us to become familiar with, because it's all been hidden or just, you know, pushed under the rug. And the only thing that was presented to us was fear consciousness. And when you stay in that state of fear, it shuts you down. You know, when you're afraid of anything, you start to close off all your centers. It's like shutting down your computer, and it's not running anymore. It's in safe mode. You know,
right.
Fear keeps you entrapped. You know, so all our religions have always had a God we had to be afraid of. You know, we're supposed to love our God, but we're also supposed to be afraid of him. We're afraid of hell. We're afraid of financial collapse. We're afraid of this. We're afraid of that. And it's very disempowering. So when you drop the fear, you find out you can actually walk through your problems. And I've done that. And it's very empowering to know that you can do it. Because, you know, nothing can really hurt you unless you let it hurt you. The physical body is one thing, but that energetic force around you, that's all yours.
That's right. You know, and your will, the free will is part of the prime directive, and we were granted free will by, and if you want to think of, you know, God as a conceptual being or all that is a primary building block. And when you realize that each one of us, and I tell people this all the time in sessions, since we were created in His image, And I'm thinking that this is more about ETs, because
right.
there are ETs who are so advanced, they have entered a godhood, you know, and then the higher you go, the fewer there are until eventually you get to, you know, the one, all that is. But if we are created in God's image, God created the whole universe, is God, we have a spark of that, and we certainly have enough power to create our own reality, and it's simply by matters of choice that you choose to buy into something or not buy into something, or I do have power, and you can use it to create and manifest anything you wish.
Absolutely, because even when you read the ancient, like, scrolls and biblical texts, where it'll say God and then the Lord God. Well, actually, the Lord God was, let's say God was the president, the Lord God is the congressman. You know, like the Lord God said, well, you know, but we've been just so conditioned to think it's one and the same, you know. Nobody's telling us how the hierarchy goes, but, you know, now that we're shifting, we're actually getting the 220 line, where we're tapping into this divine source where we can start to download the correct knowledge and know where we came from. And I think when we all finally realize that we're all interconnected, it does help us to work together collectively. And that's in the book, I really stress the collective consciousness. And by, you know, not the collective unconscious that, you know, Jung talked about, where, you know, your dreams. I'm talking about the collective consciousness, where you are living in a state of awareness that what you do is going to have a direct effect on everyone, because you're putting that energy out. So we're all adding a shot of something to the mixed drink, you know?
That's right. And part of the master plan, I mean, believe me, there is an evolutionary master plan that nearly all ET races follow, and that is the of course the evolution of a species, but it's also about the Starseed Project, where they're sending more and more where more and more ETs are volunteering to come down, jump into the Earth suit, and the Earth suit has been prepared by Bloodline to be able to hold those higher frequencies, not only through their DNA, but by the silica in the body. And with all of these millions, and believe me, there are millions of starseed beings on the planet, and each one of them carrying a higher consciousness, if we bring the overall collective consciousness, like you're talking about, up to just a high enough frequency to help the shift not be so disruptive or painful. I mean, many people subscribe to the and I am one of them, that the higher the global consciousness, the easier the shift will be.
It's like a rebirth, because it's exactly what I did when I wrote the Book of Transformation after working in the metaphysical field for over 40 years. You know, I've dealt with every level of, you know, divination, energy, interacting with people. And one day I got a new cell phone and I saw they had a quick start guide. So I'm like, you know what? Everybody doesn't need a book that's 5 inches thick that's going to frustrate them and they have to, you know, get through it in, you know, 10 months. We need almost a book that's going to tell us, here we are right now. We're on the doorsteps of this major shift. This is your quick start guide. Get familiar with your energy centers, your chakra system, how to clear out your past lives, what food you eat, symptoms to recognize as you shift. Your ancient alien ancestry is definitely encoded in your DNA, and how to finally be open to, you know, welcoming, you know, the other galactic neighbors and to stay within the right frequency. Because if this planet is going to go through the shift, like you say, almost like a rebirth, we want to make it an easy birth. You know, we don't want to have a big labor, because, you know, what we think, it all threads in with each other, and we collectively put out this whole grid of information. And if it's fear, it's going to be hard, and we'll see more devastation and more Earth disruptions. And if we, you know, kind of work together, anything that the Earth goes through as we transition into this higher dimension, it's going to be a lot easier, and we'll deal with it a lot better.
Mm-hmm. And it would be, I mean, better for the Earth itself, because of, you know, put it in other words, if all of humanity on the Earth were of a lower consciousness level, it is actually harder. It would be like the earth wearing clothes that no longer fit. She's going to bust at the seams.
You're right.
But if we're all kind of loose and baggy, then she can grow easily, and she doesn't have to go through this trauma of, you know, almost cesarean kind of rebirth.
Yeah, we're the birthing coach. I think a lot of the volunteers who've come down to, you know, to help out are the coaches for this rebirth. They really are, because this is a very important time. And of course, you know, they like to play it up as 2012, the end of the world. This is not the end of the world. This is our transition into a better way of living.
Completely agree there. Although there are some facets of the world that we all want to end.
Yeah.
You know, there are things that do need to stop. And, you know, war and greed, power lust, competition, all of those things, yeah. That
and identifying too much with the material world, like you gain your identity by how many toys that you have. It's not the case. It's like we're going to identify more with the frequency. If you're of a higher vibration, whether you have five cars or no car, if you're a good vibration, you know, that's what's going to matter more than what you have. It's like who you are, which is beautiful. I mean, that's where we want to be anyway, because, you know, we're all very creative beings, like you said earlier, and, you know, if we're all, like, tuned into the right frequency, we contribute to each other, and everything is more like a community, it's collective, everybody benefits from it.
Yeah, and there is a connectedness, and I think that I'm thinking of a what we call high strangeness. I'm sure you've had many encounters with high strangeness, things that are definitely not of the, quote, normal third dimensional thing. And we can receive information and guidance through many different ways, as you were talking earlier about number patterns and synchronicities. When you know that you're tapped into something that's beyond the physical, which is by definition the metaphysical, it just lets you know without a doubt.
It's normal to be paranormal, and even when you look around, like you see flocks of birds that seem to fall from the sky, or dolphins that die, or whales that beach, fish that die. It's like, okay, what is it? Is it harp? Are they playing with the frequencies of Earth? Are they bringing this about? Are these, you know, animals so sensitive to the waves of energy coming in? They're trying to show us to shift and tune in. You know, there's some type of a message there too. You know, it's all about waves. It's all about frequency. And, you know, birds have that natural radar. So when something throws off their radar, is somebody trying to interfere with the messages we're getting that's actually throwing them off? We have to pay attention and question everything and not just think it's some type of, you know, weird thing, like someone sprayed something in the air and they died from it. And especially when you look at, you know, the dolphins and the whales, I mean, they're so sensitive to frequency. You know, is something disrupting them? Is it part of the shift? You know, we have to start questioning more and stop just accepting what's being told to us. They want us to live in this three-dimensional mousetrap, you know, where your bank's going to foreclose on your house and your credit card, you know, is going to be a higher rate. They want us preoccupied with all this three-dimensional nonsense, because if you're preoccupied with that, you're going to miss out on the shift, and we don't want that to happen.
Yeah, well, I don't know that it would be so much of missing out on the shift, but certainly being the last one running for the bus.
Exactly.
But it's also those are just mechanisms of power and control, because, you know, as they, you know, the 1% controls the 99%, and I think that's an equation that cannot continue in this new age of Aquarius, and really, I mean, the age of Pisces is also about deception and illusion.
Oh yeah,
and the we had a guest not too long ago that coined, the first time I ever heard the phrase, coined the powers that were, rather than the powers that be, because they really they're imitating themselves now, because they are being replaced and taken out, and they're losing their hold on us, but they still want to do the smoke and mirrors thing, like we're still powerful over you. because a lot of people are just saying no.
Right, the age of Pisces is all about illusion. Like the hand is quicker than the eye, but the age of Aquarius, it's about technology. It's about humanitarianism. And it's about ecology. It's everything that Aquarius stands for. So this is the frequency we're tuning into now. Like, our personal cable systems just got upgraded. We're getting these higher stations, and we can tune into it. And, you know, it's just everybody is at a different level in their development, I find. Some people are more advanced, and they're ready to make the break from the traditional way of thinking and the limited way of thinking. Well, some people are still not too sure, but that's okay. You know, like I like to use the example, not every rose is going to bloom on the rose bush at the same time. Yeah, but eventually, you know, we're going to get there. You know, it's the survival of the fittest.
Well, yeah, but it's spiritual fitness.
Right, you're right. You're right.
It
it's about frequency.
It is spiritual fitness, ultimately. And what? Let me ask you a question, because I get this. I see this a lot where people, as you say, not every rose blooms at the same time. Well, the early bloomers, a lot of them are in family situations, and the either the wife or the husband is waking up and shifting and growing, and the other one is still asleep, or even worse, causing friction.
I see that a lot.
Because of the other ones. What advice do you give those people?
I see that a lot. And in relationships, you know, like people, you know, come together because they want to have the family unit, have children and the house and the car. But then, as you know, this is a different energy out there. And because I you know, do counseling with people intuitively and astrologically and with the tarot, I have so many coming to me right now that they've been in marriages that were over 20-some years, and all of a sudden they wake up one day. They don't want to be married. They don't hate the other person. There isn't another lover involved or anything. They just don't want it. Their frequency has shifted. They got from A to B a little bit sooner than the other person, and they're making the break. And what I tell them, okay, it's okay, you know. You've fulfilled your whatever karmic pattern with this person. It's not so much about making the break. It's about how you do it. You know, like, try not to do it from just solely the material end where you're going to go through a divorce and it's going to be about money and who gets the house and who gets the car. Try to do it more on an energy level where you cut your cords and then you fill them with light so you don't leave a hole, and you progress, because the people that are walking away from jobs that no longer serve their highest good or relationships that have just maybe hit a certain point, you know, they're advancing and they're being pulled away from these jobs or these friendships or these relationships because they have more work to do to help other people. And once they realize that, you know, they need to be available for everybody, not just one person, sometimes it's easier for them to understand. But because, you know, there's been so much, you know, non-disclosure of what's going on, a lot of them wind up on a psychiatrist couch or taking Prozac because they don't know what's happening. And that's another reason I wrote the book, because I have a whole section in there called Ascension Depression. Because as we go through the process of letting go of being so attached to just the material world, it's natural to go through this depression, because it's like, wow, now there's this gap. And what do I do with this gap? How do I fill it with energy? Or how do I know I'm on the right path? And it's about going in and just trusting that you're going to be okay. Energy cannot be created or destroyed. It can only be changed, and we are all energy. So you're not going to be destroyed. The worst that could happen is you're going to just change. Change is good, because when you change, it's a sign that you're evolving and you're moving. If you don't change, that's when you have to worry, because you're stagnant and something's wrong.
Oh, exactly. I mean, I've also always had the philosophy that if you're not growing, you're dying.
Right.
Because there's only two energies, up and down, up spiral and down spiral.
And I also noticed, too, that a lot of, you know, people that are getting married now are choosing either to have fewer children or they don't want children. And it's not because they're selfish and they don't want to have kids. I think there's a realization that the planet is very populated right now. And since we are going through the process of sorting through bloodlines and finding out who belongs where, I think it's just a little bit of a holding pattern right now. But a lot of people I talk to are choosing just to have one child, and usually it's later in life, or they don't want children, and they don't even know why they don't want children. Maybe they came from a good family, and they always thought they wanted children, but they just don't. And I think that's because we're in this transition where everything is being recalibrated and balanced again.
Well, my hit on that is that a lot of starseeds have chosen not to have children, and it's because they've already been there and done that, and this time they're here for a different purpose, not for just one or two children, but for all the children.
Right, right, you're right. I agree.
Yes, and most of us have already completed that part of our growth with experiencing the family unit, and it's just not necessary to do it over again. Now, there are certain star seeds that came here to give birth to a new race, and that's a specific assignment.
Right.
But, you know, the vast majority are just, they're here for a different reason. They're here on business, and they're not here for the purpose of learning about the family unit because they've already done it.
And another thing, too, that I noticed that everyone seems to be noticing that their relationship with time is different. You know, time is time its own dimension. Time does not exist in space, so we had to create time so I guess we could kind of function in that three-dimensional type of box that we were in. You know, but I hear so many people saying, I no sooner get up, it's time to go to bed. It's fast time, where,
mm-hmm.
you know, time and space are melding into one frequency, and we're starting to realize what we have is the now moment. This is your moment. The canvas is in front of you. Create what you have right now. Because whatever you create right now, whether it be your thoughts or your words or your actions, that's what's going to be, you know, holographically reproduced throughout the universe. You know, so our relationship with time is shifting. And I find a lot of people just, wow, they're kind of freaked out by it, actually. You know, the seasons, look how they've, it seems like it was just yesterday I was putting up Halloween decorations, and here it is, we're coming up on the 4th of July.
Right, right, and that it's just for everybody. The weeks are just blending into, you have to go from longer, it's like, okay, it's warm outside now.
Right, yeah, it's crazy. It's
yeah,
crazy,
yeah,
you
and
know.
Don't you think that a part of the age of Aquarius is about Uranian energy? And I mean, it has to be. I'm putting two and two together from my astrological understanding, and so therefore, and Uranus hates restriction.
Oh yeah.
And when Uranus makes transits to your natal chart, anything that you have going on that is oppressive or holding you down or prohibiting your growth gets just ripped out by the roots if you're really, really attached to it.
Right, and Uranus inspires us to be our unique self. It brings out the creative artist in all of us, and that doesn't mean we're going to draw and paint. It just means our thoughts. It's like, be yourself, be your authentic self, which is, that's great. I mean, it's so freeing to not feel restricted, like you have to fit into a certain mold. And, you know, everybody has something valuable to contribute, whether you're a notable person or you're just a very low-key person. You have something to contribute because we're starting to realize that the frequency and vibration just of our thoughts are also very, you know, they manifest now. Now that we're in fast time, you think something you created. I've had clients say, I hate my job, you know, I wish I didn't have to go there. I'd be like, wait, you know, delete that, because you're creating. We're in a time right now where what you say you're creating, you know, don't get rid of anything yet until you're sure you have something else that you want to do. So it's about being aware how powerful we really are, and that the extra strands of our DNA are starting to be activated. And, you know, we have to learn how to work with all of this new, I guess you could say, anatomy that we have, that, you know, we definitely need a book on our new anatomy to become familiar with, you know, exactly what we can and can't do and how really powerful we are. We don't want to, you know, blow out a system because we've misused something that we were never told about.
Right, and the ancient wisdom from Atlantis is now coming back through the beings who are Starseed walking around with Atlantean records. And it is about the proper use of power, the proper use of energy. And when you were talking, I'm thinking, if you just imagine that your mouth is a loaded gun now.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
You know?
It is. And you know what? We're doing a lot of clearings now. That's how come some relationships are hitting the wall, because past karma just means like you've done this, or you're everything's happening simultaneously, which is hard for some people to believe. Like, well, how could I be living in the 15th century and be here? Because you are, because it's all one big superhighway, okay? So every now and then we dimensionally shift and we just switch lanes. That's what we're doing, but we're consciously here right now. So this is what we're experiencing, because at this consciousness we know we're going to shift the planet. But we're also, you know, clearing out a lot of debris from other incarnations. And interesting, three kids. The oldest one was always interested, for some reason, in the South Pacific and building models of World War II ships, where the other two were always interested in anime, Japanese people. They taught themselves how to speak Japanese. And years ago, when they were young, one was 10 and one was 14, they said, "Do you think we'll ever go to Japan?" And I looked at their charts and I thought to myself, well, if they go, I don't want them to go at the same time, because I feel that there would be an accident. Well, last year, my youngest son was on a study abroad program. He went to Japan, and my daughter, who's a few years older than him, decided to go visit. And, of course, that's in my mind, and I didn't want to create the scenario that if they're there at the same time, this is not a good situation. Well, of course, they were there at the time of the major trifecta. Not only was there an earthquake and a tsunami, but there was also a nuclear meltdown. But I knew they would be okay, but I also felt there was some type of karmic clearing. I feel that they were there before, maybe during the time of the atomic bomb. Maybe my older son was in the South Pacific theater at some point. But these kids, I intuitively felt, and I actually checked their charts, they were clearing out some old karma, because they know that's necessary to let go of all these old memories if we're to ascend into the higher dimensions. We can't bring too much baggage with us. It's not allowed on the plane.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Well, we have a question from a caller that I would like to go to right now before the my goodness, I can't believe we're almost at the end of the show.
It's fast
so
time.
You see, fast time. We are going to be talking here in just a second to Debbie, and Debbie, would you care to share the information you have?
Sure. Are you familiar with Nancy Red Star?
I am not.
I'm not.
Lisa?
No.
Okay. She is a Native American, and she's written three books on Native American ancestry and star beings. One of the things that she had said that I thought was really helpful regarding the pineal gland and cleansing it was drinking clay, like Indian clay that you can buy at a health food store. It's powdered.
Okay.
And she also takes gold, and every night she drinks like a teaspoon of the clay in some juice and sprinkles some gold on there. I take the Ethereum gold, which comes in a capsule.
I've taken that too, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, so that's just some information I wanted to pass on there about that. And then also I practice sound therapy and studied the solfeggio tones. And what's interesting about those, the Catholic Church had taken those away because they felt those tones made people feel too close to God, and that they should be the intermediary between people and God. So they took the tones away, and then a man had discovered them in the Book of Numbers. And if you look at the six solfeggio frequencies, they are frequencies like 396, 417, 528.
Right, they're
all
good.
Of them. Yes, they all equal to a 3, 6, or a 9. And Nikola Tesla had said, if we knew the secret of the 3, 6, and the 9, we would have the key to the universe.
I love that. You're absolutely right. And see, this is the information that needs to come out, because so much has been hidden, locked
mm-hmm.
away, and I think a lot of it's in the Vatican Library. And we see
oh, yeah.
that there's been a lot of disclosure now that the Pope's private personal attendant is coming forward with you know, some, you know, personal documents, but there's so much there. And when my daughter was in Rome, she said, that Vatican Library is amazing, and she could only imagine what they're holding in there that really mm-hmm. needs to be shared with everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I've got this little, it's a conversation between the man who researched these codes with a Monsignor at the Vatican. And he said, can you decipher medieval Latin? And he said, absolutely. He said, and do you know the musical scale and everything? And he said, absolutely. And he said, well, then could you tell me what ut, quis laxix, means, which is one of the tones. And after a brief pause, the Monsignor quipped, it's none of your business. Then he hung up.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that interesting?
I know what I always felt a really strong affinity towards the time of Henry VIII when he broke away from the Catholic Church. Because mm-hmm. the Pope wouldn't give him a divorce. You know, I think it goes a lot deeper than that, especially since Anne Boleyn was beheaded on May 19th, which is also conjunct the sixth star Algol, which is the head of the Medusa, which means losing your head in more ways than one, and that's a Pleiadian symbol. So there was some type of symbolism there, I feel like, making the break from the structure of the dogma of the Church, and even though that was back in the 1500s, you know, it gave way for, you know, to push us forward and get us out of that, you know, the shackles of that fear consciousness that, you know, if you're bad, you're going to burn in hell.
Mm-hmm.
It was very disempowering. I mean, I'm someone who went all through Catholic grade school and high school, but I'm just saying that, you know, you get to see at some point it's more about fear and control than about true, you know, connecting in with a higher source.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, do you know that May 19th is Pleiadian lineup?
Oh, yeah. And I think Anne Boleyn was definitely a Pleiadian. She came here and she was very instrumental in starting to, you know, dismantle the false beliefs and the false structures that were keeping everyone so shackled. And, I mean, back then they had parishes, and what they were plots of land, and the serfs would work the land and give the money to the Pope, who even back then, it was very corrupt. At one time, we had two popes, and they were, you know, they had concubines, they had affairs with children, and, I mean, it was very corrupt. And I studied the medieval history a lot, and Henry VIII saw the corruption. All he wanted was a divorce, you know.
Yeah.
And when he, like, you know, weighed it back and forth, it's like, you know, well, I'll do what I want to do. And I really think that Anne Boleyn, the reason she has been, you know, so prominent throughout history, no one forgot her. It was because she really was a catalyst to push us forward and like start to break away from all of these, you know, shackles of the false beliefs and show the hypocrisy and the veil we've been living under. The word apocalypse actually means the lifting of the veil and to relieve and to reveal, which I think is really very profound.
Oh, sure is.
But I love that about the musical scale, because sound is, you can create with your words.
Yes, and just, you know, listening to the tones. People can download those solfeggio tones. And the 528 particularly, it's been shown to heal and repair DNA.
Yes, I heard about that. It's amazing. You're right.
So, good stuff. I just wanted to share that information.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you. It's been wonderful listening to you.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
And thanks for calling in, Debbie. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Ariel. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Well, I find that very, very interesting because I have been a musician my whole life and really have experimented with the power of sound and music and frequency. It's all part of the same thing. Everything is frequency.
Oh, yeah, they said even at one time there were mind control experiments that were done particularly on the Beach Boys. Yeah, I mean, to just see how, you know, the younger generation would respond to rock. And I know that the Beatles they loved the Beach Boys. So it was like the beginning of a new era of sound, too. So even if we, you know, we want to really look into it, and I think now that we're all more enlightened, it's like, wow, there's more to a message. There's more of a message into what we listen to than we actually really thought, you know, because sound can control your mind.
Oh, And I have often said, I mean, for years and years and years, that music is a power tool. And as such, it can be used to build or destroy.
Oh, and how about how plants respond to symphonies when you play them some music? It's shown to grow better.
Absolutely. I think, I mean, that's been well accepted for a long, long time that, yes, you know, plants do respond to sound. But as I said, as a lifelong performing musician, when I hear music that's got a lot of either frequency distortion or I'd have to say that my personal feeling about rap is that it, number one, is for the most part being used improperly.
Yeah, it's the beat of it, I think, is to download, you know, the different information or the frequencies, not really, it doesn't have a certain flow to kind of keep us in the higher vibration. It's more of a distracting type of a beat. I mean, I'm just saying in general, I'm not dissing rap artists or anything.
Right. I don't want a bunch of email now from rap artists.
I already
artists,
got in trouble for saying that I was afraid of birds one time. So,
I was laughing when you said that because I had a crow land on my head when I was 7 years old, and that I was riding my bike and he was hanging on and he wouldn't get off my head and I was freaked. I mean, and it took me a long time before
I had a tippy hedron moment. I would have passed out. I mean. I mean, one time walking through a nursery, like for landscaping, a bird decided that it was going to, you know, do its duty on the shirt I was wearing. I was freaked out, panicked. I drove home in, like, tunnel vision, and I just, like, could not wait to get the shirt off, and I, like, threw it away. It's, like, totally freaked out. So it's that past life fear I have that was encoded into my electromagnetic field, and I try to keep on, like, running it through and running through a program, and it's, like, you know, it's an irrational fear, you know. The material world, but still the energy left in imprint that I still deal with from time to time.
Right. Well, the important thing, as you said before, is when you do experience fear, it's a great opportunity to do something about it, because when you're not feeling it, it's, you know, hiding in a closet somewhere.
Right.
You know, so it's really look at, you know, just like training a dog, when they make a mistake, it's an opportunity to correct it.
You're right.
So be grateful for that and take that opportunity, make the best use of it, and transmute that energy, because we all have stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everybody's got stuff, and owning it is the first thing, and then transcending it simply by acknowledging it sometimes is enough. So, well, Lisa, I want to thank you so much. The time has really flown by. And that is just the mark of a very interesting guest. And we do want to encourage everyone to pick up a copy of your book, The Book of Transformation. You can get it on warwickassociates.net, on amazon.com. And we do hope that you'll stay in touch with us and keep us abreast of any new developments in your either new books or new understandings. It's just been a joy having you with us.
Thank you. I love doing your show, and I'm totally in tune to your philosophies, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. Lisa Beretta, everyone. We want to thank you for tuning in to Starseed Radio Academy. We're on every Tuesday at 7 Eastern Time. And until next week, this is Arielle Taylor on behalf of Lavendar, Anastasia, Sierra, Rose, Sahar, Chris, our team is getting bigger and bigger all the time, and we are so grateful for everyone that we have. So until next week, everyone, thank you so much. Good night.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.